Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
Auckland Council will go to iwi authorities, government ministries and local boards for consultation on a draft plan that is proposing to increase intensification in the inner suburbs and strengthen hazard rules for new buildings. Auckland's population will cross 2 million people in the 2030s. However, there is not currently enough housing available in the market to house everyone who calls Auckland home. This is exacerbated by affordability issues, where many renters and first home buyers are being priced out of the market. The Prime Minister also recently said that he wants to see consistent house price growth as the country grapples with a long-tailed recession. I talked to Councillor Julie Ferry about this new plan to zone for nearly 2 million new dwellings in the city and why it is that Auckland Council is pursuing this change in the current moment.
Can you just briefly explain the plan that's gone out for consultation on intensification?
So what's happened is that we've been wrestling for a long time with how to apply central government expectations around intensification across the suburbs. And the previous government, there was a bipartisan agreement between National and Labor to put in this thing called the Medium Density Residential Standards, which is known as MDRS. The idea of that was that most residential sections in suburbs could have three-storey dwellings built on them. That's what MDRS does. And so we had a plan change in the works called Plan Change 78, which has been delayed several times, in particular because of the floods, which would have brought in that MDRS and some other changes. And across the whole of Auckland would have provided for 2 million extra dwellings. Some of those would be apartments, some of those would be standalone townhouses, all sorts of different types. But the idea was that over the next sort of 30 years, you've potentially got 2 million extra dwellings. Of course, a lot fewer than that would actually be able to be built because of other constraints. But that's sort of the headline figure. Now, what's happened is that central government has said to us, actually, we've changed our minds on MDRS. You can opt out of MDRS and not have to have it. And I think generally people aren't that keen on MDRS. But you need to bring in a new plan change instead that will still meet the 2 million target. And so that's what's been worked on very, very quickly, because central government haven't given us a lot of time. And so that's called, at the moment, it's called the Draft Replacement Plan Change. At some point it will probably get a number. And so at the moment we've been allowed by government to only consult with local boards, iwi, ministries and adjoining councils for a couple of weeks before we have to vote on the 24th of September on whether to notify for public input the new plan or go, actually, no, we're going back to Plan Change 78, in which case we continue with that plan, which is going to be quite difficult because, particularly for my ward, there's large parts of my ward that Plan Change 78 doesn't zone, because they were under the light rail corridor, which of course is now not happening, but they were left unzoned in Plan Change 78. So don't know what we're going to do about those if we go back to Plan Change 78 rather than go forward with this new plan, which if we vote for it on the 24th of September, then goes out to public, full public open submissions and hearings and things like that.
So the MDRS is about medium density residential standards, and now the challenge posed is, can we achieve the same sort of capacity, housing capacity through zoning, through a different or alternative plan? Is this involving like zoning for high density buildings as well?
Yeah, so what's happened is that basically because we've removed that MDRS, then we have to find the capacity through other means. And in some cases, we've found that through putting in zoning for the light rail corridor, which up zones makes more intense, some parts of that area from what the unitary plan, the current rules allow for. So there's nothing in Plan Change 78, but there is existing zoning under the unitary plan. And then under the new plan, we, for example, allow, you know, six-storey buildings along parts of Dominion Road where that makes sense because there's good transport links, right, for example. Okay, so the previous zoning might have only allowed three or four storeys. We put that up to six in some places, and that gives us some more dwellings, right? That helps us to meet the 2 million target. But it's not enough. So we are looking at much higher buildings potentially around, in particular, some of the train stations. And the Minister has specifically named five train stations where we must go to 15 storeys. So that's around Kingsland, Morningside, and the new Maungafo station, previously known as Mount Eden. And around two more where we must go to 10 storeys, which is Mount Albert and Baldwin Ave. So there are other areas as well. And if you look at, there's a really cool map with hexagons on it that shows the difference between Plan Change 78 across the whole region and the new plan change, where the red bits are where we've gone up and the blue bits are where we have less intensity, so basically where we've removed MDRS, or where we've downzoned because of infrastructure constraints, in particular flooding risk, which is something we can't do under Plan Change 78. It's a really useful map. I'm going to put it up on my Councillor Julie Ferry Facebook page hopefully today. And you can see from it that the reds are along, for example, the Western Line and the Southern Line. And the blues, which is where we are going for less intensity than under Plan Change 78, are sort of those less well-connected areas, areas that flooded, that kind of stuff. So Plan Change 78, we couldn't do any downzoning at all. So that's another big difference, particularly for my ward, where we had a lot of flooding issues, that the new plan enables us to go, actually, hey, ordinarily, yes, this is on a frequent transport route. Maybe we'd put this up to six or eight storeys, but because of the flooding risk, actually we're not doing that. And indeed, in some cases, we're making it less intense than the unitary plan, which we couldn't do under Plan Change 78.
One of the things I'm interested in, and you can maybe help our listeners understand as well, is, you know, we have these pressures weighing on us, right? Whether that be, you know, climate-related pressures with flooding events or extreme weather events going to be happening more frequently into the future, a population that is increasing quite, not rapidly, but is going to increase to a point where we do not have the infrastructure or the housing ready to cope with that demand. And so I guess my question is, well, why there has been a delay in introducing higher intensification housing into Auckland's housing stock? I mean, I suppose we've sort of seen it coming for the last few decades as well, but the insistence of the city has been to spread out as far and as wide as possible. Why has that been the modus operandi instead of what's being proposed in this plan?
Well, first up, I have to say we don't have enough housing now because we actually still have a housing crisis. We still have people living in cars and garages, couch surfing. We have a lot of hidden homelessness, particularly amongst women, people living in overcrowded conditions, having to stay in housing that's not right for them. So we already have a shortage. And I do get annoyed at colleagues who are like, no, we've got enough housing, we just need to have fewer people. And it's like, that's not how this works, right? We can't put, and we shouldn't put a wall around Auckland and go, hey, we're full, no one else is coming in. That's just, you know, not how humanity works, right? And it's not fair on people who already don't have the quality housing that they need and deserve. Everyone should have a right to housing. So why haven't we done this sooner? I think it absolutely comes down to political will. In the first Auckland plan, which, if I recall correctly, was done about 2012, there was a general political agreement at the time that we should try to have a more compact city. And through sort of the last 15 years, there have been various points at which there has been a high-level political agreement to do things like a 70-40 split. Now, 70-40 doesn't add up to 100, but the idea was that 60 to 70% of new housing should be in the existing urban area and as much as possible close to the city centre, close to amenity, and then 30 to 40% would be sprawl on new on greenfields. To my mind, that is still too much sprawl. But what we have seen when we actually get down to voting for plans that deliver that ideal. Is that there has been a lot of reluctance from my colleagues past and present to actually do the upzoning to enable more housing closer to the centre and in existing urban areas. There's also been a lot of pressure from developers to develop greenfields, and it's been really interesting to watch. This term there has been more pushback where, for example, Watercare have come out with really clear capacity maps that go, hey, if you want to build in this area, we cannot service you with a sewer system until, you know, 2032, for example, I think it is in parts of the Hibiscus Coast, when we will have built this new sewage plant. But until then, you don't get a resource consent if you want to build a house here because we can't deliver the sewage system unless you build a septic tank, which you're then going to have to maintain yourself. And that's getting a lot of pushback. People are going, well, hang on a second, I should be able to build on this land that I've bought to build a house on, and you should be putting in a sewer line. But we're having to go, well, actually, the cost of that infrastructure, building new infrastructure is always going to be more expensive than retrofitting infrastructure where we already have it, and that's without taking into account the increased transport emissions, the increased carbon emissions from building further and further away as well. So I'm a really strong supporter of more closer in. But I'm not always in a majority around the table.
That's really interesting. You talk about political will. I mean, there's, I guess, another part of why that attitude exists is because there's an electoral landscape in this country, but also in the city, where people rely on their house price appreciating over time, right? Yeah. And the result of that is if we build in suburbs that, you know, have people who have very good house prices that have been growing over time, that might seek to depress those house prices because of, you know, the added supply. And that's part of the opposition here. I mean, the Prime Minister has just come out and said that, you know, he wants to see consistent house price growth over the next few years. Is there a palpable tension there? I mean, coming into local elections as well, is this an issue you foresee having to contend with?
Yeah, I mean, one of the political realities is that we have no renters around the governing body table. Everybody owns their own home now. The last renter was Jo Bartley, who's great. She managed to buy a home using a shared equity scheme through the Tamaki Regeneration Company just recently in her 50s. And otherwise, she's been a renter her whole life. But she has brought that perspective to the table, and I really appreciate that. But otherwise, the governing body members, your councillors, we are the property owning class, and some of us own a lot of properties. Or it's a long, long time since we rented, and the rental market is very different now than it was when I rented, 20 years ago. So the importance of having either those voices directly or people who will seek out those voices and make sure they are heard at the table and in our processes, that we are becoming a city of the haves and have-nots. And then when you look at the voter cohort as well, only sort of 30-35% of Aucklanders actually vote in the local government elections. And we know that people who own property are much more likely to vote and much more likely to be aware of things like their the size of their rates bill, the value of their house and be very sensitive to things that might change that, because in a lot of cases it is their primary asset, you know, it is their retirement savings. So it does really, I think, result in a sort of misshapen a conversation about housing supply and the types of housing that we need and where we need them to be that isn't necessarily reflective of the whole city and all of our residents and what they need for the future. Yeah, and I'm really hoping that this new plan stimulates more conversation and more discussion that I've been sharing across the various suburb Facebook groups in my ward, the new map and the old maps, so people can sort of hopefully be a bit better informed. But I am getting people who are going, oh no, more housing in my suburb, I don't want that because it means shade of my house, you know, could mean shade of my house, even though there are actually rules in this that hopefully prevent a lot of that. And then I've got other people going, bring it on, we need more housing. People who have experience of living in apartments, for example, who are saying, yeah, I'd love to live in an apartment in my neighbourhood, but there aren't any now. So hopefully it's stimulating more discussion and more awareness of people's different needs and different views, that it's not all, hey, we have to stop intensification and set the city in amber, because cities have to grow and change. That's a healthy city. And the more housing we have that, you know, keeps our people safe and warm and dry and hopefully living in situations where they don't have to own a car to participate and they can access what they need, you know, that for me is the vision for the city, not keeping things the same.
I suppose that's really important when we consider the fact that so many New Zealanders, but particularly young Aucklanders, are leaving to countries like Australia or even the UK, maybe even Asian countries, where apartment living or, you know, medium density, high density living is kind of a norm, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that this plan might do enough to keep young people here and continuing to contribute to, you know, not only the lifeblood of the city, but also its economic growth and its future?
I think it's absolutely vital. I mean, my eldest is 17, and he has said to me numerous times over many years, actually, because he's that kind of kid, that he doesn't expect to be able to buy a house in Auckland in his lifetime. And I mean, he's probably going to have access to help from the bank of mum and dad when that comes around, because, you know, we can probably do that. Probably be the bank of Nana, actually. But anyway, that's not the reality for a lot of people, particularly people whose own family are renting, right? The cost of housing, you know, we talk about a cost of living crisis. A lot of that in Auckland is housing. And it is driving people away, in particular young people, because also they can often earn more overseas. Cheaper housing, it's often more easy to travel and see the world from overseas. You know, we are kind of the hardest place to explore from. And sometimes the weather's better, you know. So my husband's family, most of the cousins in his generation, so I'm talking about my generation, have moved to Australia. A lot of my friends have moved out of Auckland for housing. So they've moved to Tauranga or Hamilton or Christchurch because they couldn't afford housing here. And that's my generation. So, you know, the next generation coming along, I think it's a huge risk. We risk hollowing out a lot of these suburbs. In fact, it's already happening. So Grey Lynn School, for example, their role has dropped enormously because families can't afford to live in that suburb. It's a great school. There's no issue there, but they can't get kids in the door because there simply aren't families who can afford to live in that community. And what that does to a community as a whole, where you don't get that vibrancy, you don't get that mixing of people at different stages and ages in their lives. You know, one of the other advantages that having more apartments and more in different types of housing will mean is that as people's lives change and they need different housing, they can stay in the same suburb. They don't have to move away to find the type of housing they need. And that means they can continue connection, less loneliness, all of those advantages. So for me, just yes, for young people, but also for older people too. This brings a lot of advantages. And I think also people have a mental picture of high density like Hong Kong or Singapore. That's not what's being proposed here. And I do get a bit annoyed at people who you know, say that's going to happen in all of our suburbs. The city centre may become more like that, but it's going to take decades. And it's a long time before we're going to have that. This is more going to be genuine medium density with a little bit of high density in our town centres over the next 10, 15, 20 years.
That was Councillor Julie Ferry about a new plan that's proposing to add an additional 2 million dwellings to the city's housing stock with specific density around new train stations and inner suburbs.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Counselling on 95 BFM.